Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Boost Analytics. Boost is a one-of-a-kind technology company that provides NBA caliber analytics and video analysis to a select number of men's and women's Division I basketball programs. Boost uses artificial intelligence and natural language technologies to make analytics more user-friendly and translate complex data into easy-to-read coaching insights. The Boost platform was built by data scientists and basketball experts with decades of experience at both the collegiate and NBA levels. To learn more about Boost and how your team can gain a competitive edge, head over to their website at www.boostsport.ai and join the fastest growing team in college basketball analytics. Also, if you're not already a member and interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, please visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content. It'll allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, see job opportunities on our member site that you won't see posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. Today, we have a special guest, Coach Phil Weber. He's a former college and NBA coach, professional trainer. He is also currently an executive advisor, a keynote speaker, leadership consultant, and most recently became an author of a must-read book called How to Make Them Thirsty, a book on human development and helping others maximize their potential. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Coach, thank you. You know, it's great to be here. Great to be here.
Yeah, excited to hear your wisdom today. And I'm sure our listeners are excited as well. Give us a little bit about your background. We kind of announced you a little bit there, but tell us a little bit about your journey. Very unconventional and, you know, different than most people's. And just kind of talk about your experiences through basketball and kind of where you are today.
Well, you know, like everybody, you know, you start somewhere. And I came from a great family and parents are amazing and, you know, blue collar type. Hardworking. And I think that's where I had this, they instilled in me that work ethic. But, you know, I got to tell you, I thought I had it all figured out. You know, it like I finish at NC State. Two trivia questions, by the way, in Annals of NC State History. Okay. You're not going to find these anywhere. I created those because, you know, who was the fourth scholarship player to Sidney Lowe, Derek Wittenberg, and Thurl Bailey? Phil Weber. And then the other one is, who's the only idiot to be redshirting the year they win the national championship? So V gave me a ring and all that kind of stuff. But I got to tell you, Coach, you know, when you're so close to it, you know, and you're part of it, I was getting beat up every day and trying to do my best to do whatever I could. But you just, it left me almost with more of a hunger. Because you hadn't really felt it, right? You haven't, it wasn't there. So real fortunate, Coach Sloan, who had recruited me for University of Florida, gave me a coach. Literally, I got my first job. I bet all the coaches on this thing, I bet they wish it was that easy. I called up a guy, coach who recruited me, right? And I knew they had just had an opportunity to open up. I'm 23 years old. And I go from just, you know, being a, you know, player, non-player at NC State to a bench of SEC. So all of a sudden, bang, there I am. Long story short is success doesn't go like this. All right. There's so Norm was forced to resign. And what happened was traveled the country. Came back. I went to Chaminade University, which was a great experience, but I was not Shaka baby, right? It wasn't, there was two people were too laid back. Yeah. And you're so, so far away. And coach, geographically, you're far away. But what people don't realize when you're out there, it's paradise. But chronologically, you're so far away. So I was just too hungry to stay out there and, you know, just live in paradise. I wasn't there yet. So took a job, was able to get a job at Iona. And I got to tell you, and I'm sure a lot of coaches who are listening to this are probably feeling this way, right? You're doing everything, right? I was studying tape. I was trying to create as many contacts as I could. I was trying to learn the game from all the different sources that I could, and just wasn't happening. And I was blessed, kind of, and I didn't know it was at the time. A buddy of mine who we had played on all-star teams that traveled the world, the guy's name was Brett Barrett, rest in peace, the knucklehead, went ahead and passed away in 2018 on me. And But we had done, you know, as players in high school, we had done a crazy stuff as far as fun, right? We went played in all these different tournaments. Well, he takes a financial, it's a crazy twist, coach. So all of a sudden now he's been trying to hire me for 3 years. Coach, come, Phil, just leave coaching, come work with me. And I'm like, nah, leave me alone. Leave me alone. He said, no, come on, next year. Boom. You know, oh, by the way, and I know everybody, all the coaches who are not where they want to be right now are doing this same thing. Hey, fellas, I lived it, right? You have that rejection letter. Now it's probably now it's electronically, right? You get, you know, have all those, and it starts stacking up. It starts stacking up, and for 3 years it just wasn't happening. And every year he was trying, hey, come work with me. And he had an investment firm, and he was working with professional athletes and entertainers. Smart, brilliant guy. Anyway, I wasn't retained. They changed coaches, and I wasn't retained at Iona. So okay. Now what? Well, I'll listen to my boy, right? We go way back. He's been trying to hire me. Okay, so he flies me in. I do all this. And let me tell you, coach, it was a whole different world in that, you know, he picks me up in this big Benz, and I'm just trying. I'm living in a closet, literally, in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm just, you know, living in a closet. And all of a sudden, he picks me up in this Benz, goes to this amazing office in this building in Lexington, Kentucky. And he says, hey, Phil, come on with me. So we go, and he's 6'9", right? He's a big dude. So we go on this outside looking elevator. That's like, you go up and you can see the whole Lexington little at a time skyline, right? But we see for miles. And at the top, he goes, hey, when we were traveling around the world, did you ever think I'd own a building like this? Well, paradigm shift happens, right? So I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I left and I said, okay, I took the plunge, got a couple series six, series 63, just so I could market, right? I'm not trying to, you're not giving your money to me, believe me. Okay. You're not. So I could live anywhere. Well, of all the things, I chose LA. Had I not chose LA, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. So I choose LA, couple NBA teams, that, you know, couple football teams, baseball, Hollywood, money, right? I've never done the left coast. So go over there, get a small little hovel. I'm still in hovels, right? And what was so unique was the first high school that summer, I left college coaching. Now, all of a sudden, we sponsor a high school All-American trip. On that team that we sponsored that first summer was Baron Davis, Ricky Davis, Jason Capono, and Dean Oliver, all future NBA guys. And what happened was Baron lived in LA. So I go, when we come back and say, hey, Baron, let's go ahead and get together. I think I can help you. And, you know, that led to me following him. I was Prop 48 when it came to LA geographic, right? I don't know anything, right? So he says, let's meet at the old men's gym at UCLA. So, all right. And again, I'm just, let's go up, and we go and we walk up these, it's the old men's gym. So it's these antiquated cement stairs that lead to where Coach Wooden had all his practices. I mean, to me, it was like historic, right? I'm going on this journey. I open this door on a September day. 30 NBA guys are playing games. Pickup. Magic's over there. All the Lakers. I mean, it was nutty. I never knew there was such a place where they congregate and play every single day. Fast forward. Now, here's where my story speeds up, you know. Fast forward 3 years, I'd worked with over 100 guys in the NBA. I'd always work with the UCLA guys in separate workouts during the summer. So Toby Bailey was one of my guys. Well, Toby gets drafted. He gets drafted in the second round by the Phoenix Suns. So he comes back after that first year with Phoenix. And, you know, he kept telling me after about a month, you know, hey, Danny Ainge really wants to watch you work me out. And I'm like, that's fine. He's the NBA guy. He can coach me. Tell me what you want. Footwork, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Well, nothing really happened until all of a sudden I'm coaching a team for a friend who was a smaller European agent. So there was, it was an okay team. It was like a freshman game, you know, before, you know, there's nobody in the stands. There's people just yelling, you know, there's no interest in really in our game. Well, they're getting everything ready for the NBA game next, right? It's LA Pro Leagues. And there's Danny Ainge. Well, Phil, you idiot. There he is. He wants to watch you work Toby out. Go meet him. I never met Danny. So I walk up and say, hey, Danny, this is Phil Weber. And, you know, if I'm working Toby and some other guys out tomorrow morning, if you want to come. So sure enough, he goes, oh, Phil, like kind of putting a face to a name, I think. And he shows up early in the morning. Anybody who knows, you know, LA traffic going from Long Beach up to Westwood is not an easy trek, right? So you go up there, and I had five different guys in the workout, right? Toby was one of them. It went for about an hour and 15 minutes. And then he, you know, he said, hey, coach, can I talk to you? And I'm like, okay, to me, I'm, you know, hey, by the way, all the other coaches who are paying attention to this, certain conversations in your life are going to be, you're going to remember every syllable. So that was literally my first conversation with an NBA coach. And he's like, he goes, what's your background? I'm thinking to myself, that's an odd question. And then he said, and I'll share it with you. I was blown away by it. He says, Phil, I've been a player all my life. I've been a player in the NBA for 13 years, a coach in the league for the last three. A perfect workout was only in my mind until today. He then said, coach, words that have reverberated in my mind till this day. And that is, what in compensation would it take to get you on my staff? So I go from out of coaching to the bench of the NBA. And the funny part about it, my dad, total disbelief. There's no way this is happening, right? There's no way this is not happening, right? It's not happening. And so it was a little surreal. And I hired an agent that day. And, you know, I have, for the coaches that are trying we're always trying as coaches. All right. And I was blessed. My dad was a high school coach. Right. And I came from that mindset and, having played basketball all my life. But coaches have to stay true to themselves. But you know what the most important thing about, I think, my journey was, is that I have always, always focused on improvement. And you know, we ask ourselves right now as I speak, coach, stop thinking. You can't. And of those thoughts, 95% are habitual. So I have worked, you know, that's been a parallel mission for me, to not only on the athletic side, but on the mental side. How can I improve myself? So I put myself, you know, I have a laptop right now. That's why you're seeing me, right? That is so powerful. I want to put my mind on automatic pilot. How do you do that? Well, guess what? I don't have any clue to the exact answer, but my journey has been all about that. So it's been all about that. So the longest probably answer to a single question, but that's kind of my story. And I was, you know, I was with the Phoenix Suns. I was with the New York Knicks. I've been, you know, with offense advisor with a couple championships with the Miami Heat and New Orleans Pelicans, and head coach of India and head coach in the G League. So that's my background, but I gotta tell you, it's an honor to speak to all the coaches. Because it's so much of my DNA, right? It's us. So there's that.
Well, it's a remarkable story, and you know, I read actually the intro to your book, and there was a lot of similar comparisons in that intro. You did a really good job, and you paint the picture very clear. There's a couple of takeaways that I feel like, you know, could be really relevant to our audience. The one, you know, you talked about, you know, your setback in terms of the Iona situation. And instead of getting bitter or, you know, worrying about that, you continue to get better. And I think that's something that in our profession that sometimes people forget about is that, you know, it's about our journey. It's about continuing to develop as coaches instead of getting bitter of, oh, so-and-so is getting a job or I'm not getting my opportunity or thinking that, you know, you deserve more or something else when all you got to do is continue to get better. And the other thing was talking about, you know, just a little bit of your relationships, not only with, you know, your journey with that team that you took and the opportunity to continue your relationships with those people and your old friend put you in positions to, you know, have the opportunities that you were blessed with of having, you know, putting yourself in position to be successful by sticking with those relationships and sticking with people. And I think that, you know, that's a credit to you and your relationship skills and kind of going into it. But that's really cool. I want to touch on just one little part of that. So you mentioned, you know, being in a hot summer gym and, you know, at UCLA and some of those people, and you mentioned John Wooden and, you know, the chills of what it was like. Did you happen to get any interaction with him, or was there any, you know, conversation that you ever had or ran into him during your time in UCLA or at UCLA doing your workouts?
So it was the one reason why that was the case was, and kind of, let me take a step back, adversity and the questions. If there's anything that coaches will take from this time we spend together, is that your life will be determined by the questions you ask yourself. And when I got let go, and it was hilarious because, you know, we had won the SEC the year before Norm resigned. And so 2 weeks into that next season, we have everybody back. Everybody. So we're ready to rock. So it was like crazy when all of a sudden I find out that Coach Sloan resigns. And, you know, when that happened, I was in kind of disbelief, full on. So now that was the first time I ever really felt adversity, right? Real adversity, where I was mature enough to understand this is not good, right? So what the funny part of was, I had a condo and a couple of the players, former players, were living there at the time, right? And so it was on Halloween, okay, no less. This all happened on Halloween. So I get into my car all dejected, right? I'm going back. There's three different news stations outside wanting a quote from me. I mean, this is crazy. How do they even know where I live, right? And when I go back, I walk into, you know, my condo, and the former players who are some of my best friends in the world right now to this day, and they're like, hey, what are you going to dress up as today, you know? A coach? And I'm like, whoa, this is a tough club. This is a tough crew. But the next day, and this is for the coaches, the next day, I promise you that by myself, because everybody had, I was supposed to be going to practice, no longer, you know, it's like a really empty feeling, right? So I was in that condo by myself, and I can honestly say I asked myself the question, how can I make this the greatest year of my life? Wow, well, guess what happens? You know, ask and ye shall receive. It's biblical. You ask a great question, and you're going to get a great answer. So what happened was, I said, this may be the first time in my life that, you know, and the Gators were paying me, right? So at least I had some money, right? They were going to pay me. I didn't have an agent at the time, but they were going to pay me. So I can learn from some of the best coaches ever because their seasons are still going. Coaching, fellas, again, is like musical chairs. When the season's on, music's off. Everybody's sitting down. Well, I got pushed off of my chair. They said, hey, get out of here, right? So I, you know, not to belabor the point, but I went and visited 16 different universities. And coaches were amazing. We are in a great community, right? Coaching is a great community. People care about each other. And so to get to the Coach Wooden, so one of my stops was with UCLA. I did a West Coast swing. I did a Midwest swing. I did a Northeast swing. I did a Southeast swing. And you get very profound, Coach, when you're in a rental car by yourself for weeks, right? Crazy. So basically in LA, Coach Godfrey, who had played for Alabama when I was coaching at University of Florida, we became friends and kept in touch. He gives me tickets to the game. I'm going, okay. So I can tell you that day where all of a sudden I'm walking into Pauley Pavilion really early and guys are warming up and half the stands are filled and I'm walking in there and there he is. There he is. There's Coach Wooden. He's sitting down. There's a line of about three or four people to go meet him. And I wait online and, you know, hey, you know, I finally get to meet him. Hey, Coach, this is Phil Weber. I coach with Norm Sloan at University of Florida. Now, Norm beat him in 74. He didn't need to know that recognition. That was, now that I know, that was so far from, he didn't care. But he said, Phil, call me. And he gave me his phone number. I'm like, are you flipping kidding me? So that was Saturday. I was set to leave on Tuesday. But I would have stayed a week, 10 or whatever, if we meant to chance to meet with him. So anyway, Monday morning. All right, Monday morning, I'm going to a Burger King and I ride out because now all of a sudden I'm going to see Coach Wooden. You better have your stuff ready, right? Coaches prepare. So now I write 12 questions that I really care about. So now I hop into my rental car and I go down the valley to Encino where his condo was. And I promise you, Coach, the radio was playing, but I couldn't hear it. All I had in my head was, I'm off to see the Wizard. And the man was the most articulate and learned man I've ever met. So your picture, I don't know what everybody's picture of a coach is, but I had a paradigm shift that day too, because of how he spoke and how there's a feeling when you get with people like him where it's hard to express. There was just such peace and he just wanted to help. So Coach Valvano, as I'm leaving, and he was amazing on some of the stuff. Like, for instance, he talked about leadership. Okay, now whether or not this is why I started writing poems, I don't know. But he breaks into it and he goes, no written word or spoken plea can teach the youth what they ought to be. Nor all the books on all the shelves. It's what the teachers are themselves. We lead by example. And I'm like, this guy is, he talks about adversity, what we've been talking about, right? He says, in life, it's like lifting weights. Well, guess what? When you lift weights, there's tension there, but yet you grow. So as I'm leaving his condo and I'm like, Coach, you know, Coach Valvano often said that life boils down to very few moments. And without question, this is one of those moments. And I just wanted to thank him, right? I just wanted to thank him. So I sent him one of those Harry and David things, you know, and because I had his address, right? Because I was just visiting him. So I sent, you know, so I sent him that. And I got back to Gainesville on Tuesday. Well, let me tell you something. Thursday, I'm just going to the mailbox. I hadn't been back in how many weeks, right? I'm traveling around the country. There's a note from Coach Wooden. And it said, Dear Phil, although it is often used without true feeling, when used with sincerity, no collection of words can be more meaningful or expressive than a simple thanks. He must have worked for Hallmark in his spare time, right? he had to. But he became like my pen pal then. I would send him notes, and he sent me one of his practices, handwritten, in from his last championship year. And Coach, I will tell you this. The great ones, and I've had the opportunity to be in the presence of, I think Kobe would be one of those, but Coach Wooden, when the truly great ones, everybody has that story. That story's not unique to me, and that's what makes them great, because of their perspective and because the way they look at the world. So when I went back up to, you know, that when I'm walking up those stairs, you know, how many years later, it was like, oh, wow, it was a moment. It was a moment.
That's really, really cool that you were able to experience that. And you know, obviously when you're in the presence of a legend or have the opportunity and you prepare for it, I'm sure you were very nervous. I had some really good questions written down. You talk a little bit about his perspective on leadership. And, you know, I've you know, invested a lot of time, especially during COVID, in reading more and instilling in myself and trying to become a better leader and coach. And, you know, your journey through college, MBA, you know, experiences with a lot of different human beings, your journey, you were around a lot of different leaders and, you know, different focuses. And now you've even written a book and you know, serve as a consultant in different leadership capacities. So talk a little bit about your journey and how you kind of shaped yourself as a leader, you know, some of the development part of it, and you know, some of your focuses that you found through leadership through your experiences.
Yeah, you know, I gotta put this out there that everybody has to find their own path, right? They have to find their own path and who they are as a person. It's, you know, I'm no better than anybody else. It's just my way, okay? From, you know, and I don't say this. Believe me, I don't say this to impress you, more so to impress upon you my journey of consuming over 500 books on the science of personal achievement and leadership and the mind and all these things. So I pay close attention to the people that, you know, I've been in the presence of. And like, coach, you know, if you're talking about leadership, one of the main things I took from Mike D'Antoni, coach D'Antoni, is leadership could almost correlate. If you're going to pick one word, and there's a lot of different words that mean different things in leadership, right? But it's the number one is to connect. You got to connect, right? And so when I say that, like Mike would walk in every single day to practice, didn't matter, every single day. I would just watch him, right? And he would touch up every guy, every single guy. It didn't matter who, every guy. And he would, you know, even if it meant, hey, you okay? You okay? Just so that person knew that his feelings mattered. People have to be, you have to show that to people. The number one thing, as Coach Wooden pointed out in that poem, is you have to be the example of leadership, right? You have to be. You have to walk your talk, because guess what? They're watching. They are watching you. And any incongruencies, any time that you slip up, they're watching. So you, and then if you slip up multiple times, then it's hollow. You're not okay. You do as I say, not as I do. No, that's the number one thing, you know, and it's believing in others, right? I'm a personal believer that, you know, some of the things of language of leadership, one is be the example. Less is more, where you, if you can say it in fewer words or with a concise statement, do it, right? And to me, what I have really focused on, and Mike was great this way too, and I think all the really good coaches, you know, empowering language. You know, they don't speak in terms of any kind of negativity. It's always of an empowering nature, right? So it's, and, you know, I think all great leaders have to be curious. You have to listen to who they are. And in my book, it's funny because I go on quite a few of these. And one of the things are every player is different, right? So when you're coaching, you got to understand that. And it's your job, by the way, it's your job to work until you figure that out, right? You have to learn and try to connect with each and every one of those, right? And to go back to the always improving. So now you're always improving on your connection with each and every one of the players that you work with. And guess what that shows? That shows you care. And guess the most important thing most important, forget everything I just said. If you get this one right, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's it. And it's you develop that trust, you develop that respect, mutual respect. And Coach Wooden had a great distinction that I thought you can never demand respect. Coaches try to do that. I've watched, you know, some where I almost, you know, it's like listening to fingernails on an old chalkboard when coaches, because to me, it's you can never demand respect. You command respect with who you are, you know, and it's and I think that the other thing that's really important, and Mike was great at this. I know that, you know, my work with Spo, he encompasses all of these, right? All of these. And is humility. You have to, and part of that, and people are now really, you know, it's kind of one of the modern kind of things that people are talking about is your vulnerabilities. But people are afraid to voice theirs if the leadership hasn't voiced theirs. And you know, you have to share with them that you messed up. And guess what? We're going to get better. Because it's not that you make a mistake, it's that you grow from it. That's it. People, hey, we're all, you know, it's part of life. There's no perfect thing to do out. There's no perfect way out there. You make mistakes, you grow, and let's go. And then the other leadership language is arguably, and it echoes somewhat of what the first one is by example, but what is your intra language? What is right now as I speak? Okay, everybody who's listening, watching, they're thinking to themselves too. So that language, that interior language that you have with yourself, that's the one that is always pushing you to grow and become better. And let me tell you, it's a different world with the ability right now to go online and to listen to this podcast. Not just that, not me, but there's so many resources that are available that people need to take advantage of. And I think that as you grow and you just take one thing from each source, you're going to be amazing, because it really is. It's a process, and you got to fall in love with the improvement process. You know, it's, you know, Kobe has one of my favorite quotes, and basically, If you're not obsessed with your profession, we don't speak the same language. And you know, he was a whole different mindset.
Yeah, you had some really, really good points in kind of what you're referring to, and you know, just to kind of summarize a couple of things that I feel like I can relate to. And, you know, a lot of times an older school approach or what people think coaching is telling others to do it and they do it, when really our job as coaches is to model the way as a leader, model the way in terms of our relationship skills. You know, you mentioned a few powerful words in terms of like humility. That's one of our core values in our program. Another one is passion. You know, that kind of goes with your Kobe thing. If you don't love and aren't obsessed with learning and wanting to be the fastest learner in the room and being, you know, a sponge on steroids, it's not going to work out as well for you if you can't bleed that passion and speak of it. The other thing I think is really important is you talked about clarity. I think clarity gives you power. If you can do less with more, you know, and be able to use and utilize your word choices in a way where people understand, I think is extremely powerful. And that mutual respect and checking on other people and showing that you care and love, and still be, you know, in essence, tough on them. And one of the chapters in your book that I noticed was geared towards accountability. And I wanted to ask, you know, just a couple of questions in terms of accountability. And that's something that I've kind of struggled a little bit at times as a coach, especially with, I understand that my kids are different. But they always compare themselves to other people and their stories. So when you do things certainly privately with some players and publicly with others, you can go at kids in different ways and the relationship that you have. You know, talk a little bit about some of your experiences with the word accountability, how you've, you know, become better as a leader in terms of, you know, as a coach or amongst other people, not just self-accountability, but more or less holding others accountable to doing what they're supposed to do and, you know, continuing to grow better and their why and their purpose behind it.
You know, it's funny. It's really funny because we all have, you know, an understanding whether we're doing right or wrong. We all know whether we're doing right or wrong. And I'll tell you a funny story. It's in the book, you know, but it was pretty funny because I wasn't doing anything differently that I haven't already done. And I beat it, you know, I just beat it to death. I know, but the questions are so powerful. So the story goes, and it was Sunday, city, you know, summertime. Al Harrington joins us, and I tell Al this. I told this story to him, and he's the best. I mean, he's so gifted, and he had such a great career. On this Sunday, we were going to get some extra work. And let me just tell you something. If you wanted to work at 2 a.m., and it didn't matter when, I was going to be there, right? If a player wants to get better, let's go, right? Let's go. So we coordinate. We're going to meet up at the Nick, you know, the Nick practice facility up in Tarrytown. And so he got there and I'm there and we get work. We, you know, take him through the normal warm up, do whatever you got to do to get ready and, you know, do some stuff. And I try to build it like this, you know, okay, I get it, you know. But then we hit that time when it's go time for the workout, right? And to me, that's the coach's number one job. Your job is to establish the standards in your practice, in your presence. So it was Sunday afternoon, beautiful sunny out in New York, right? Hey, Al, I've seen how great you play. I've seen how hard you can work. I know how hard you can work. But right now, the way we're doing this, this is not who. And then I asked him, I said, let me ask you a question. Let me just ask you a question. Knowing you and all your abilities and all the levels of intensity that I've seen and witnessed that you've performed on a level of 1 to 10, where are you right now? Because I know you have a bunch of things you can do. I have some things I can do also. But if we're not here trying to become the best player we can be, why are we here? Didn't say a word. Didn't say a word. Went right back to where he was before we kind of got together and talked. And the next 30 to 40 minutes was just crazy. It was awesome, actually. And he was so gifted. So the next day, I'm just in my office. And the trainer comes in. He's like, Coach, what did you do to Al yesterday? And I'm like, what do you mean? We just worked out. What are you talking about? He came in and called you a beast. But think about that, though. What is stated in that, right? Coaches establish the standard. You establish the standard of how your workouts need to be, right? That's your job. And then it's the player's job to be accountable for their actions. We all have a conscience. We all know if we're putting out 100%. So my recommendation is to ask the questions. Where are you? How hard do you play? Where are you right now? Are you 100% focused? And again, I think it behooves the coaches to make sure they understand that players have egos, right? So they all know and think and feel they're really good. And it's utilizing that as a resource for you. Because to me, it's very simple. Coach's job is, this is where a player is, Okay. A coach knows that that player can get here. Our job's simple. All you do and do all the things that go in there, though, there's a lot of there's a process to it, is to bridge that gap, get that person up there. And that's it. And holding them accountable to their efforts and the standards. And that's the only way we, like, for instance, if a shooting drill, if I was going to have a shooting drill with a rookie, okay, and I was doing consecutives, let's say, right? All of a sudden, now, maybe I set the standard for three in a row. Now you do Steve Nash, you know, that whole series of drills you were going to run where you have to make three in a row, it'd be done in five minutes. So you have to set it for 10, right? So just like with communication, and I don't think I touched on this, but I wanted to. A rookie, a younger player, the communication with those younger players is different. A Brazilian player, rookie from who hardly speaks a language at the time, who doesn't know the NBA, who's learning everything, you have to be more segmented. You have to, there has to be those step by step by step by step. And the ultimate on the other highest portion of that spectrum is the Steve Nashes, where you're like, hey, Steve, help me. I need to, you know, because you learn, you watch, you grow. So there, and there's all those different places in between. And again, you go back to being a coach. You got to understand where that player is in order to communicate properly with them. And that's learning the uniqueness and of the individual player, worker, employee, manager, whatever you do. Again, that's your job.
Yeah, that's another special point. And I think, you know, you talk about kind of like what a performance gap is of like, hey, knowing what the standard is or knowing what your ceiling may be and narrowing that gap of actually knowing what to do and actually doing it. And, you know, I think that's extremely important to recognize and speak upon. And, you know, the standard is the standard, you know, knowing what you want to hold them to and knowing what they want to hold themselves to, I think is extremely reflecting, you know, but having that awareness too, I think is another piece to that of understanding, you know, what it is that you can lie to yourself all you want and helping other people understand what self-awareness is, emotional awareness, part of it, you know, your intelligence of what's actually going on and being able to continue to work and empty your tank and give 100% focus, give 100% effort, give, you know, understand your attitude does matter and your self-talk and all those different aspects that kind of go into it. So I feel like a lot of this stuff that you've spoke upon is obviously very well polished and very well understood, and you paint a very clear picture and you do a really good job with stories. And I think that's really powerful. What inspired you to kind of write a book, and why did you choose this type of book to go into it instead of, you know, a basketball specific book or anything? Like what is it that, you know, drove you to want to speak upon these specific instances that you do within it? And, you know, as you transition, you know, you're not necessarily out of coaching, but you're not technically on an NBA bench right now, but you do so many other things. So why did you jump into that space, and what kind of inspired you to, you know, go into writing a book and becoming an author and so many other titles that you've kind of evolved yourself into outside of just basketball coaching?
Well, I have to tell you, I've been blessed with my journey, and you know, I'm at a place where I would welcome an opportunity to go back in the right situation. Right? There's no question. It's a passion of mine. It's a love of mine, the locker room, and all those different scenarios. But as you go through life, there are choices, right? And it's one of those things where it's almost like I was meant to be doing this. I've always just tried to be the best coach I could be. That's been my only focus. So I'm doing the same things, just with different types of people. And the one thing that I really want to stress upon all the people that are listening to this is that as you improve, as you grow, and as your knowledge of understanding in people, and that's what my whole journey's been. It's been players. it's been understanding. There's different verticals, so to speak, of a coach, right? You wear many hats. But in order to be the best at all those hats, you have to continually grow yourself. Socrates said it thousands of years ago. The key to living is always to learn how to live. So what happens there? So in regards to the book, I've had some people. One was a good friend of mine. He was at one time the, you know, CEO of International Speakers Bureau. He's been telling me to write a book for forever. And I'm just like, to myself, okay, that intra, right? We go back to the intra dialogue. You don't have a platform. You know, what's your platform? You've been a head coach internationally. You've been a head coach in the G League, but you haven't moved over those 18 inches yet, right? So I was hesitant. I'm listening to a podcast, okay? So here we go. The power of the podcast, right? Beautiful. And the thought leader asked the question. He asked the question. Or actually, he first said, everybody's heard that phrase. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And then he said, but my question is, how do you make him thirsty? And once I heard that, it was like somebody just punched me in the nose, because that's been my life. That's been my life. I mean, I don't need, people can lead without title. You know, people can lead without title. And I literally wrote the diagram. All I started to do then was imagine my workout. How am I going to prepare my day? You know, a day with a workout with a team, individuals and all that. I wrote my outline literally in like an hour. Now, it took a whole lot longer to put all those pieces together. And to, you know, it's what it is each one of those pieces. You got to go down the rabbit hole, right? You want to make sure. And as you know, I'm not 316 as a player. I didn't have supreme length. I didn't have some of the physical capabilities that great players have. So having said that, what I did always try to do was, how can I do it better? What can I do with this? And with that mindset, it's kind of set me on a path to this. And when you reach a certain point, and I've always believed, I think I got into the league for two reasons, literally, because first, Danny Ainge's was way ahead of his time, way ahead of his time. I mean, think about it. I'm arguably, you know, the first coach specifically hired for player development. I mean, think about how many coaches have since been that, right? And I had two beliefs, okay? I had two main beliefs besides believing in myself, you know, and people around me. But one, if you reach a certain level of expertise, eventually the compensation will match the expertise. It's kind of like Outliers before Outliers was written. And the other is, if you give without any expectation of receipt, magic happens. And there's two mindsets for leadership that people speak on all the time. First is growth mindset, where you go into every single situation where you want to grow. And the other is outward mindset, where you think of others first. And I think if you're always in alignment with those two mindsets, life turns out to be amazing. So I'm in a position right now, coach, I just want to give back, and I want to, you know, help whoever. And I want to, and it's, again, it's amazing when you give. It's my parents have lived this. If I could talk a whole day on what they've done for other people. And you know how they've hard worked, but it's those two mindsets. And you know, I'm just, I guess, trying to live up to you know them, because what that they have created for so many people. And in my own way, I'm just trying to do my part.
Yeah, you're doing more than your part, so don't sell yourself short on any of it or what you've done. And you know, sharing your knowledge with the world is extremely important. And, you know, I really enjoyed those two points that you just made. So if someone was interested in purchasing the book or learning more about it, I know the release is coming up soon. Tell us a little bit about how they can find out more, or, you know, about your website or anything like that. Plug yourself for 2 minutes. You got.
I got to tell you, Coach, here's the thing. First of all, the publisher said I was a ghost on social media, right?
Maybe true. You created a Twitter. You have like 5 followers. You got to get your following count up.
So right now I'm in the process. And as you can see, they didn't have this printed behind me, but this was because they were killing me about it. So I had it printed up, right? So you can find, soon I'm going to have a website, and it will be coachphilweber.com. And you can go, if you put in my title into any search engine, you're going to see the title of the, you're going to see this book right here. And what I'm also very excited about is in the future, we're not ready yet, but coaches, and all people who are listening to this and watching this, is that to me, the greatest gift that you can ever give another person is believing in them. There's no greater gift than you can give. And so what I want to do is I want to shine those lights. So many successful people who have lived and are living have had people in their lives believe in them when they really didn't believe in themselves. And help them get through adversity, which we talked about earlier, to get through different situations. And so I will be creating the Believer in Me project, because I want to shine a light on all those people, those that never get any kind of recognition, because I believe if more people think about how and believe in others, the world's just a better place.
That's special. As we kind of wrap up here, I like to ask, you know, in maybe 60 to 75 seconds, see if you can answer these questions with a couple of rapid fire things.
Uh-oh, rapid fire.
Yeah, challenge our audience here. You know, what is something that they can do or take action doing in the next 24 hours that will better their life?
Create an I am list, where they say they create an empowered I am list, where all of a sudden now they say it to themselves every day and change their brain the way they think about themselves.
Yeah. So like an affirmation list of, you know.
Well, here's the thing, make it empowering, because how many I ams, anything that you say after I am defines you. So no negativity here. Okay.
I like it. What lesson do you feel like has taken you the longest to learn?
Probably, and I'm nowhere near there yet, but always be a tremendous listener, right? When you learn something, I say you always should teach it, because you makes you more accountable and you grow more, but also listen more, you know? And everybody wants to give their opinion of things. And it's one of the things that I'm focused on, and because again, we are always growing, right? So listening is one of the things that I think that is a challenge for all of us, because we want to be heard, but it's very important.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important. And, you know, you talked about impactful questions too, and asking good questions. I think that's part of being a good listener, is finding ways to ask questions in a way that inspires thinking and growth.
Hey, let me just tell you one point that, and I want to give him a shout out, David Thorpe, who works great with different players, is, you know, he mentioned a phrase, and I correlate it to my work with Kobe. The great ones listen with their eyes. They listen with their eyes. So they're all in. And just to follow up the listening.
That's awesome. What is one thing that you believe in that others may think is weird?
That's a tough question. I mean, I guess the best person you should ask is my wife. I'm really focused guy. So, my beliefs are kind of vanilla. I don't have many, I don't even, you know, again, I'll bring my wife on with me the next time.
There you go. All right. The last thing, you know, what is, you know, you've lived a very unique life and done some amazing things, and your perspective is awesome. And I enjoyed listening to you for the last hour. You know, what is the best thing that can happen to your life right now? What's the best thing in your life that can happen?
Well, you know, it's all about family. Okay. So I think to continually, what could happen right now, I don't think I would change anything right now. And I say that with all, because, you know, we never are arriving. We should always be striving. So yeah, there's things be a head coach in the league. Okay. That would be one that would be, you know, life changing. And I would relish that. I would love that. But with my family and with, you know, the times and moments and I guess become a head coach in the NBA, which is still an ambition. And my goal is just to hopefully empower as many people, you know, while I'm blessed to walk the earth. So that's never going to stop as long as I'm, you know, my bold legs will keep on walking.
That's good. And none of this is amazing. Like, none of it's really about you either. And I think that's really special. So is there anything else that you want to talk upon, or any questions I should have asked that I haven't, or anything else you want to plug before we end the podcast here?
You know, I do want to, and I talk almost invariably on this topic, because I don't necessarily think all people understand the level, of what it takes. You know, they can talk and say they're involved, but again, the great ones always have stories. If you ask anybody who's ever worked with or seen Kobe, and let me just touch on that story, because I think the coaches will appreciate that, and that I was asked to work with him, you know, on his shooting after he had his rookie year. So he didn't start as a rookie, and he was basically, he was 0-for-7 or air balls and stuff against the Utah series the year before. Right. So his agent asked me to work him out, and I'll make this a brief version of it. And basically he shows up. Okay. And he was so lasered focused in, and Arn Tellem and I had discussed that we were going to work out for 8 days and he was going to go play in the summer league. So laser focused. And I got to tell you, we started off so basic, 1 foot away. We had to you have to go back, right? The mind, again, the mind is like a steel cable, the way they're shooting right now, or whatever way they present. The only way you build another steel cable is one strand at a time. You have to create that myelin that's in there. So all of a sudden, so now Kobe, we're going back, we're working on it. Couple changes. I mean, he was so focused. And he saw success. So that led to his eye. It was just great to see. Well, anyway, not about that. It's about his mindset. Much has been talked, written about it, but it's real. And after that hour and 15-minute work, I had four different players, NBA guys, ready for a second workout. Because Kobe's done, next group up, you know, let's go. Kobe goes, can I stay? I go, sure. So he stays. And let me tell you, nobody worked harder. Nobody worked hard. I mean, they didn't want him in the workout, but he was there, right? It was, so that workout gets done. Next hour, another guy, there's guys waiting to come on. He goes, coach, can I stay? Sure you can. Blows them away. That happened for 7 straight days. And on the 8th day was Sunday. And what Kobe and I were just going to have a refresher, and we're going to go all through, and it's just me and Kobe. So we get there, and again, super locked in. And I can tell you, coach, as we walk out of my antiquated cement stairs that we've talked about on this podcast, and I can probably point to the bricks area right where the Bruin is over there and the school store is right there where I stopped. And I'm like, Kobe, I know I'm not telling you something you probably don't already know, but if you keep working as hard as this, you're going to be one of the best players to ever play the game. He almost stopped me mid-sentence. And with a look in his eyes and a conviction in his voice, said, I am going to be the best to ever play. And I can, you know, tell you how it continues, because 2 years later, all of a sudden now I'm coaching in the NBA, unfortunately, and we play the Lakers in the second round. We beat San Antonio. Now we're playing the Lakers against Kobe Shaq, right? We lose game one. Now it's game two. We're up 1 point. Jason Kidd is draped all over Kobe with 3.9 seconds to go in the game. Bang! It was almost as if he surgically went in and took all of our hearts and put them on the table. Because now, instead of going back to Phoenix 1-1 with home court advantage, we're down 0-2. We lose game three. It wasn't close. We beat them game four. They probably wanted to celebrate in L.A., you know. So that's over, right? And here's the point. So they cut down the nets. 5 days. 5 days after the net, after they cut down the nets, the Lakers. I lived in L.A. the previous year, right? So I go and we go see some friends, stay in the marina, get a hotel room, show, late flight, yada, yada, yada. And I'm going to go get a workout. Yeah, it's 8 o'clock. I'll get a workout. It didn't work out yet today. To Gold's Gym. I go to Gold's Gym at 8 o'clock, 5 days after the Lakers cut down the nets, as a Phoenix Suns coach. The one thing you do not want to see as you walk through those doors is a lathered sweat. 8 o'clock at night, Friday, 5 days after Kobe Bryant just working his butt off, getting ready for next year. So all those stories you hear, if there's one thing that people can do is be extraordinary with their, everybody, there's so much, 99.9% of the world is normal. But it's those extra normal activity that you focus on allows you to become the best you can be. And all the great ones have those stories. Again, that story's not unique. Everybody has a Kobe story who's worked with them. I mean, and so if there's anything that they take with it is you can do it if you believe in yourself. You stay focused on your improvement. You look to try to make others better. If you help others get what they want, ultimately you get what you want. But you're always in control. You're intra-control. So go out and just have a spectacular, just be great, but own it all and grow.
That's perfect right there. That's a great ending to, you know, a wonderful podcast. And I really appreciate you taking the time over the last hour and, you know, again, sharing those stories. You said everybody's got great stories and different things, but you paint the picture so clear in other people's minds. And I think that's really powerful that your ability to do that and relate. And, you know, I feel it. Like if I felt it, that means that, you know, you're doing something that's extraordinary and uncommon and, you know, keep doing your thing and, you know, hope the best things, you know, that you're looking for in your life continue to go.
Coach, thank you so much. I do want to, and I'm going to say goodbye in a second, but I do want to say one thing that's because of what you just said. Okay. And I had to grow with this, and I think it's going to be helpful for others, is that when we learn facts, things go, neurons fire off in our brain. But when you hear a story, it's like 4th of July. It just sends all these different messages to you. And so as coaches, spend time in how you do that, because stories can be powerful. Their stories are powerful. And believe in others. And I just want to end by saying thanks so much for allowing me to be part of this today. And I hope if anybody sees and wants to reach out and I can be helpful to someone else's journey, please. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Well, thank you. And again, look forward to the release of your book coming soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Coach. Thank you.